Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Unnamed MMA Podcast with Jordan Sherwood and myself, Mario Heron. Follow Jordan on Twitter at Wood on ESPN 1000. We have breaking news. It finally happened. Well, you know, I guess finally is kind of a rough way to put it. But Carlos Ulberg has surgery for his torn ACL. And Jordan, I think we're going to have another interim champ.
That's really what the timeline's going to be. Yeah, successful surgery, but proving what we all thought was what we had witnessed on Saturday, that he did suffer a torn ACL. And look, he is the UFC light heavyweight champion of the world, but because of the legitimacy and the seriousness of the injury, I mean, he's not going to fight until a year from now. Maybe 9 months to a year from now. We have seen some quicker recoveries, but in my mind, quicker recoveries in different sports, especially with a sport where you can literally take a leg kick to the knee that you just broke. It's a situation where, you know, it's unfortunate. I will be remiss. I forgot to mention this. Like, this was, you're just going back to Yuri. Like, I was thinking about this when I was talking about collapses and just utter brutal failures in sports. Duke UConn, this just previous NCAA tournament. Duke just had to hold on to the ball. Yuri just had to hold on to the clock, and he's the UFC light heavyweight champion of the world. And we're not talking about this situation, but yeah. So it now really, like, we need action from the UFC matchmakers into determining what's next for this light heavyweight division. You can't let it sit on the side. I think, like we had talked about it, you got to build up off the momentum. If it's Paulo Costa, if it's Magomed Ankalaev, if it's Khalil Roundtree, if it's Yuri again, I think a lot of steam now is about Khamzat. He's going to fight at middleweight, and he's probably going to want to be done with fighting at 185 pounds, and that his next step will be either he loses the title to Strickland, goes up to 205, or he wins and then just gives the title away and goes up to 205. So I think we've got some options. It's not ideal, but it is the reality now of the 205-pound division.
So I've been thinking more about the Khamzat moving up to light heavyweight, especially if he wins versus Strickland. And, you know, the division needs it, like we've said. They need some type of energy, some type of new blood. But the more I thought about it, the more I'm, like, kind of disgusted that he would move up. Because what damage has he done to that division? He beat Strickland. I'm like, okay, but you still have another fight after this with a guy that's deserving of a title shot. You still have, I would say, 2 to 3 guys that are in the running for the belt. I mean, Fluffy probably needs a win, obviously, after a Strickland loss, but he's back in the combo if he has a dominant one. Kayo is still very much a rising contender in that division. Joe Pyfer just looked fantastic against Israel Adesanya. Nasruddin got screwed over by Sean Strickland. DDP still, we don't really know what's going to happen with him. We don't know who he's going to fight next. But it's not like you look at 1 through 10 and he's mauled 7 of them. You know, like if Merab around this time last year before the Peter Yan fight, if he was like, hey, I'm going to move up and wait, we'd go, yeah, that makes sense. You just beat everybody. Ilia Topuria, you just beat everybody. It makes sense for you to move up to lightweight. There's no one else for you to face anymore. Volkanovski, before he fought Ilya, made sense for him to move up. He kind of beat everybody. Islam Makhachev, literally killed everyone. And then it's like, okay, like, yes, you can move up. Just the Khamzat going up there, when I go, I still have a lot more to be desired from him. Yes, he made DDP look like he was, you know, not even close to a championship fighter, and he dominated that fight. But I don't love the, hey, you won twice, you're up. You know, it's like, own the division first, you know, make sure that you're the biggest dog in the pound before you get moved into a different, you know, different backyard. So yeah, that's only my pause with it.
I agree. I've always had that stance. I really have. I've always felt like the only really true option for a fighter to go up in weight or change weight classes is after they've cleared out the division and cleared out, you know, rightful contenders. And I agree with you. I mean, I do think that, like, if I'm putting Khamzat in the octagon against any of the top five 185-pound fighters, he's a 3-1, 4-1 favorite. And maybe has to prove that he can go through those guys. But unfortunately, right now, that's not the nature of the UFC world that we're living in. And I think if you were to take any fighter and force his hand and make like guarantee me that like you're going to do this to have him fight, I'm fine with that being Khamzat Chimaev, because he's just been so inconsistent in his fighting, whether it has to do with injuries or, you know, other things that have come up. So I really think, like we talked about a couple days ago on our pod when we had to have immediate reaction at 327, I think you're going to have two middleweights fight for the 205-pound title. I think the next fight and Khamzat Chimaev. There's a little animosity history between those two. They were supposed to fight, a couple years ago, I believe, and Paulo had to pull out of the fight. Paulo looked great. He beat an undefeated light heavyweight fighter. Khamzat, if he wants to go up, you know, he's champ, he's undefeated, and there really isn't that other argument to be made of someone at 205, which is why we're trying to compile a 4-man or 8-man tournament to determine the new or interim light heavyweight champion of the world.
If we had to do a ranking of like best career moves so far made in 2026, I think Paulo Costa is up there with making that move to light heavyweight. I mean, this could really, really benefit him. He's stuck in no man's land in the middleweight division. He struggles to cut it. He's not getting enough wins. He has one huge win, and suddenly he's literally in this title conversation. They talk about a last career surge, right? Like this, if you told me this last year, like I would have, I don't know, I said this last year, but I would say he's dead in the water. Like he's someone you make a name off of. And then now we're sitting here going, is he going to have a belt around his waist? Is he going to have a chance for this? So, I mean, it's just business wise and like whoever told him to move up, I imagine they were like, hey, we should probably have done this like 3 years ago with how bad your weight cut is. But it's, I mean, truly something that needs to be studied of how genius this was.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, just perfect timing. Again, we described it when we were previewing the UFC 327 fight card. It was moving day in the light heavyweight division. And the guy that made the biggest move, the biggest lane change, was Paulo Costa. Reyes Walker had an opportunity. They didn't grab a hold of it. I think we were always under the impression that, you know, instead of Paulo Costa, you know, we were going to have Muzakhanov be the guy, be 17-0, maybe get a finish over Paulo Costa, a former title challenger in a different weight class. He could have made a move. And quite frankly, like, I mean, Ulbrich was there, but then he just, you know, he tears his ACL. So it's an unfortunate incident. But yeah, I mean, the only other maybe argument that can be made would be Ilia Topuria, because the featherweight division to me is just is lacking outside of John Silva, but John Silva had that loss to Diego Lopez. There wasn't really anybody there that like you. So him going up to lightweight and trying to, you know, chase that, be that two division champion now, and beat some of those animals at 155, smaller comparison, but I think Paulo Costa is in the running for sure. Best move from a lightweight, from a weight class standpoint.
The other thing, and you mentioned that featherweight division too, has juice, but it's like it's a low amount of juice. It's like the worst steroids you could ever get. You know, it's like the steroids they give you. You go, well, you're gonna have to work out 3 times a day. Still, it's not just one 45-minute session in the gym. Just because, you know, Volkanovski is awesome, but I think the UFC is definitely scared of Molsar potentially beating him and being a champion and having that reign, which I just don't think UFC wants. This is something, Jordan, that I just came across, and I came across it, I started thinking, and I maybe have stumbled across the best or worst take I've ever had in the unnamed MMA show history. Okay. So why don't you stay with me on this?
This is going to be interesting because you're also wearing a ridiculous hat today too. So
okay. We need to address this because this happens at ESPN Chicago so much, and it's insane to me. The hatred that happens between White Sox fans and Cubs fans is so one-sided, and it's all White Sox. You guys hate us for no reason. We don't do anything to you.
We're the Sox fans are the redheaded stepchild. They're the second team, and they have just as passionate fans as the Cubs do. But like, look, I'm biased because I grew up on the north side of Chicago. I grew up in Cubs territory. All my friends growing up were Cubs fans or claimed to be Cubs fans, whereas I grew up as a White Sox fan because my grandfather was grew up on the south side. So my dad, me. It's like a lot of them are not really true like fans. They like to go to Wrigley and like have a beer and like hang out. Like I'm listening to or watching 162 White Sox games. And Cubs fans, not so much.
Okay, the hatred. I'm sorry that Wrigleyville's fun.
Oh yeah,
I'm sorry that it's a good time.
It is fun. I do enjoy going to Wrigley. It is a good time. It is a good time. But like
That's the argument from you guys. Oh,
it's the only argument we have. It's the only argument we have. Like, you know, look, I wish our owner paid more money and bought some more players and spent money, even though Cubs fans complain about the amount of money they spend. Like, it's still not enough. I wish that Wright Field had all of the surrounding neighborhoods and restaurants and bars, like, in and around it, like Wrigley does. I'm jealous of that, for sure. You know, I'm jealous of the fact that, like, the Cubs are a national team because they had a national television deal with WGN radio, so their games can be watched anywhere in the country. I'm jealous of the fact that, like, it became routine. Like, you came home from school and you watched Cubs games. They played day games. Like, but, you know, I'm a Sox fan. I will never cheer for the Cubs. I will never cheer for them. And, you know, look, that's just who I am. So that is going to annoy me, but go ahead with your point, whatever it was going to be.
It's a great hat, I would like to add. You know, fun fact for you? You know the day I bought this hat was?
When you bought it? You bought it, October or November 2nd, 2016.
Okay. All right. That was hurtful.
Am I close?
That was hurtful. No, you weren't. You were very far off.
Is that when they won the World Series? Is that the day?
I don't know if it's the day exactly, but that's it. That is the year. I will say that the first time I ever was drunk in public was when the Cubs won the World Series. Was that a bar in Indy? I shouldn't say that. But they were serving everyone. They didn't really care for you. It's go Cubs go. But no, I got this hat the day I got the ESPN Chicago job.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's with my dad.
Gift or little splurge or like?
It was literally with my the parents were visiting Chicago. I just moved in and they were helping me move in. Got a call from shout out to him Brendan Riley. And then my dad was like, "Oh, let's go to a Cubs game." So we went to a Cubs game, and my dad's a big merch guy, and he had a couple, and he decided to buy like at least $400 worth of stuff for like no reason, and then he's like kind of coming to his senses, and he looked at me, he's like, "Hey, I don't want any of this," so I just got like $400 of Cubs stuff because of his.
All right, it's a nice memory for you. You know, joining ESPN Chicago, it's a nice moment with you and your dad. I get it. Like I have that moment too with the Cubs. Like, so I know we're now this is an MMA podcast. We're talking about baseball.
We'll circle back. Yeah, we're good.
So like my mom's mom, so my grandma, like diehard Cubs fan. Diehard mm-hmm. Cubs fan. Like no longer she's you know, unfortunately no longer with us, but she lived to be like 98 years old. Like she lived a great life, long life. And she got to witness, you know, the Cubs winning the World Series. And, like, she was probably, like, 96 at the time, whatever it was. So, like, I definitely was not happy the Cubs won the World Series, right? I mean, but I was happy for her. I was happy for her because I had a great relationship with her. We talked, like, basically every other day. So I, like, you know, that game ended at, like, 2 a.m., right?
Yeah,
she was in Florida, right? So I was like so excited because I woke up the next day and I was saying to myself, look, I know she hates the fact that I'm a Sox fan, but I'm going to tell her. I'm going to be the one to tell her because, you know, she's not on a phone like she's reading newspapers, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to be the one to tell her that the Cubs won the World Series. And I shit you not, at 96 years old, she was up for every single second of that game, every single out, sat through the rain delay, and witnessed the Cubs winning the World Series. And to and be able to, like, talk about it and share that moment with her, like, that was awesome. Like, I was really, like, that was heartfelt for me. But so
that's amazing. And then you got the rumor is in at ESPN Chicago, that's when you got a Cubs tattoo. It was just like, what the hell's going on?
Yeah. We'll go uncensored for the next version of that. So it's right we're talking about this, because the fight card this weekend is certainly lacking a lot of anything, really.
It's lacking everything it needs. But back to my point of the crazy take that I have for you, that it's probably bad. I think it's pretty reasonable to say, if what's expected now within UFC International Fight Week, if we get Islam fighting in this, and he fights, I'm just going to say Ian Garry because, you know, I love him.
Yeah.
And we get Connor, that's rumored to fight in it. And then we get Patty, that's, he just said on a podcast recently that he's expecting to be on that card, and he's already had talks. So if we get those three guys and Gable Stevenson, would it be fair to say that this card is going to be better than a White House card?
If Connor is involved in any way, shape, or form, it is automatically better.
Gotcha.
I'll just say that right now. Like, Connor is this. Connor is that needle mover. He is that star. That would be absolutely amazing, because then that would, like, really set up some opportunities for some cool matchups, you know, in the back half of the year. And that's what they should do. Like, that's what they should be saving him for. They should have saved him for the White House. The White House is set, you know. Let's get Connor on that. Yeah, that's not a bad take at all. I'm in for it for sure.
Like, that's all I've been thinking about now as soon as I came across it, just because, I mean, you know, obviously Connor, like you said, you put Connor on anything, that's the number one thing in the sport, without a doubt. But then you also have Patty, that's got to come on this return after getting beat by Gaethje, and it's like Gaethje just kind of ran circles around him. What's his next opponent? Do you give him Gamrot? Do you give him Hooker maybe? Actually, Hooker is probably the best option there. And then if Islam Makhachev, who's, you know, got to defend his belt now at welterweight, there's a good amount of options there. It seems like Ian Garry is the top one for that. Gable Stevenson is the long-lost king that's, like, supposed – he's supposed to come in the UFC and, you know, bring out the sword. And he's the next guy that we're going to kind of anoint as the – best fighter of this next generation. So there's just so many storylines to go into it, and there's so many different factors that, even honestly, even if they, maybe if they didn't even have Connor on it and they got some other guys in it, I think it'd still rival it. You know, like, it's this White House card's good, it's solid, but if you have all these names attached to International Fight Week, and you have all these big storylines that I would say are more interesting than ones you have in the White House, I don't know, man. Like, I'm a little bit more bought into it. And, like, we talk about, you know, gambling and the fighting odds too. You know, we talked about this, the White House card. I think I know who's going to win every single fight. I think I know exactly how everyone's going to play out. I have no idea who would win between Islam and Garry, or if it's Islam versus Michael Morales, or, you know, somehow that he gets the winner of Carlos Baratas versus JD. JD, I want to get a rematch, but you get what I mean. Yeah. You know, I don't know who'd win if it was Patty versus Holloway. Like, that's actually kind of a toss-up to me. Like, I don't really know how that one's going to go. Stylistically, it'd be quite a challenge. Gable Stevenson, I just want to see him in the octagon and how he looks against a UFC fighter. So just so many different routes, and I think it leaves you guessing more and leaves you more attached to your screen because you don't know what's going to happen, versus White House card. Hey, I just know what every knockout's going to occur. I'm just kind of just waiting for it. And then the people that don't watch UFC are probably going to be like, oh, my God, this is ridiculous. It's like, yeah. I mean, this is like the Bills beating the Dolphins. You know, we all saw this coming. It's just, you know, only a matter of time.
Yeah, and you're right. I had to go ahead and look at it, and the only one that near pick 'em odds is the main event is Gane and Pereira. Everything else is a very heavily one-sided. You know, Topuria, big favorite over Gaethje. O'Malley, big over Zohabi. Rufi over Chandler. Nickel over Daukaus. Lopez Garcia is relatively close, and I'm seeing that the Hogan Lewis odds are posted. Hogan's a 3-1 favorite over Derek Lewis, which
okay, he's 3-1. Wow, I mean that makes sense. Wow,
yeah.
All right, well we crapped on this card, and it is bad. It has no juice. Yeah.
You know, it's, I mean, the issue is like you got like, you know, I hope the Canadian fans get put into a frenzy, because like that is how this fight card is set up, and those fans are fantastic. Like they've been
for years.
So you know, but like when you've got a co-main event featuring a guy making his proper, no pun intended from Mike Malott, but his proper UFC debut in Mando Nallo, you know, a guy that trains at TriStar, the famed gym that George St. Pierre, you know, made one of the best gyms in the world, but he's making his UFC debut coming off the Contender Series. The dude's 36 years of age, so it's either now or never, but he's got a favorable matchup in against Jai Herbert, you know, a guy he probably could knock out. That's all Mandel Nallo's been doing, but that's a problem, right? That's a problem when you've got a co-main event featuring a guy that is making his debut, or if you want to argue, it's, you know, Charles Jourdain and Kyler Phillips is the co-main event. Jourdain is popular. You know, he's a fun finisher. He's won 3 fights in a row. He's also Canadian. And Kyler Phillips hasn't fought in a year and a half, and he's coming off of 2 losses. So that's where I think that this fight card is certainly got some issues. But I hope that, like, again, what's, you know, oh, Canada, you know, what's we're going to see. I think a lot of the Canadian athletes perform well on Saturday.
I mean, they should. And like you said, like the matchup wise, I mean, it kind of goes in their favor the whole time. I looked at this card and I was like, did Dana White anticipate that we're going to lose to them in hockey? And he was just like, this is just a screw you to you guys. But it's like, oh my God, we won. So that's like a double screw you.
Right.
And like the Gilbert Burns things, I said this during, before the show, I loved Gilbert Burns. He's obviously, you know, one of the most, I would say, well-liked guys in the UFC. But now he's just someone you make a name off of. Like Bilal Muhammad made a name off of. JDM, Sean Brady, Michael Morales, like all these guys he's faced, it was just a stepping stone for them. It was just to say, hey, they beat a ranked top 10 fighter. They beat a guy that everyone knows in the UFC. And I think Michael Mott's looking to do the same thing in his home country. That's why he's a minus 345 favorite. And that's why I think also he sleeps them pretty quickly and it's a quick KO. And then we all just go home happy.
Yeah. That's what I'm struggling with a little bit because, like, yeah, you're right. 4-fight losing streak for Gilbert Burns. You know, the wear and tear is finally catching up with him. You know, he's 40. Two of those four losses were finishes, Jack Della Maddalena and Michael Morales. Those guys are finishers. Sean Brady, Bilal Muhammad, really not finishers. The issue that I'm running into is that Mike Malott is not a finisher. I know he knocked out Charles Radke, but he really isn't. He's very well-rounded, but he's not a devastator in any way. And he has shown that he has struggled with cardio at times. Gilbert will not slow. Neil Magny beat Mike Malott in a similar kind of, you know, instance where they were trying to feature Mike Malott on the come up and Neil Magny humbled him. But Neil Magny does that to a lot of guys. So that's why I'm a little bit concerned about your take on the finish. I probably will see it. I mean, we should. There's a reason why this matchup, but there's hesitancy for me to say, hey, yeah, it's a fat jack pick, Mike Malott inside the distance, Mike Malott via KO. Because like he's not really that fighter. Which you know raises red flags for me.
I think if you go that route and you just really have to lean on a glass jaw of Gilbert Burns, you know what I mean? But at the same time, I mean, to go against that argument too, yes, he got knocked out by Michael Morales, and yes, Morales is a striking is insane. He has a lot of power. The time between this fight and that last one, it's been almost a year. You know, like it's not like he's taking this and this was 2 months ago and you're going, okay, so who's the dumbass coach that didn't say anything to him? You know, it's like, no, he's taking some time off. He's going to go into this fight a little bit more fresh. The home crowd part of it, the Michael Malott probably knowing too in this, like he has to make a statement. Like you said, this is a fight, like this is a platform that's built for him to take the next step. That's built for him to become the Canadian name. That when they do this again, he can headline it again. Or you know, when they want to market in Canada, they can put his face up there and everyone flocks to it. Everyone's pumped about it. So he's kind of got to like realize this moment and kind of has to come into this knowing I got to do a finish and I got to make this pretty exciting. Because if I don't, this is a huge, huge missed chance. So I think there's going to be pressure on him to finish. The flip side of that is maybe he gets a little too cocky. Maybe he makes a little bit of mistakes too. And the veteran like Gilbert Burns is able to capitalize on it. But either way, like, Jordan, is there any other bets that you feel exceptionally confident about on this card?
To open up the fight card. First fight of the night, Jamie Siraj, another guy that fights out of the famed TriStar camp, making his UFC debut. But he has 7 victories on the regional scene via submission, including the last 2 by rear naked choke. And John Yannis, who he's fighting to open up the card, has been submitted. Let's just see here how many times in his career. His 2 of his 4 losses have come via submission. Siraj via sub plus 195. Again, this is regional guys, you know, guy making his debut, but he's the Canadian. I might throw a little bit on there. I'm also raising red flags about Robert Valentin, who's got 3 losses, I believe, in the UFC. In a row. 2 of them he's been knocked out against the guy making his debut, but he's the underdog, and I don't know how Valentin's a favorite against a guy I think that's won 10 fights in a row, has got 8 finishes in his career. So LeBlanc at plus money might be something to look at. And I think I mentioned the aforementioned Nalo against Herbert. Asking Nalo to be ready for Herbert, who's been in there with some of the best, including Ilya Topuria. And he had Ilya Topuria in some trouble when they fought several years ago. But Nalo via knockout plus 165. And I might throw a flyer down on Charles Jourdain to get that famed guillotine choke for him to win via sub. So that's what I'm looking at. Official plays at Fat Jack Sports will be out later today, Friday.
Let's go. Make sure everyone freaking tails that, all right? Because that's the only way you're going to enjoy this thing. The other thing I throw in for you is a stupid parlay I have cooking for this. Barbosa, okay. KO, I have to start off the main card. Look, he's won 4 fights in a row, and he's knocking guys clueless. I don't trust Dennis's chin. He's got crazy hooks that just go through his opponents. I think he's just going to walk through Dennis, and it's going to be a quick and easy cash it. Now it's at minus 225, so it's kind of like a no shit bet. But that's why I'm going to parlay it with Jasmine to take out Silva. Silva's uptick in competition, she just kind of tends to fall to. Anytime you see someone that ranks a little higher, has a little bit more expertise, or just a little bit more dangerous, she kind of kind of falls to it. So I don't trust her at all. And obviously the odds don't either. So minus 305, you parlay that with the KO option. You get some money back, and I don't think that's a bad bet. I don't think that's a bad play for a weekend that doesn't have a lot of, you know, if you're a big bettor, there's not a lot for you to bet this weekend unless you want to bet on some NBA playoffs, which I always say I think you should wait until after game one to do that, because sometimes those odds get just way over bet or just swing way too crazy. So I would take that one, but that's all we got for you on the Unnamed MMA podcast with Jordan Sherwood and myself, Mario Heron. We got Fat Jack Picks coming out. Jordan's a Cubs fan. Good day, Jordan.
It's been a good day, man. Yeah. No, look, I mean, it should be exciting cards for sure. You know, in the coming weeks. So looking forward to it. And yeah, I would say if you're leaning one direction or another, lean Canada on most of these fights. Saturday night.
Oh, Canada. Still not number 1 in hockey though. All right, thank you guys so much for listening. We'll see you guys next time.